part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Well, great to have you back on, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you for joining me, and thank you for joining me for this book. I should say that your name is Jeremy Whitley. You are a returning guest on the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. I can't even count how many times you've been on at this point. I should have researched, but I love having you on.
Thank you. Yeah, it's. I'm always happy to come on and talk to you and chat about... whatever new thing I've been obsessed with writing the last, usually when they come out like a year ago at that point, but
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry we couldn't get to this earlier. Fall is busy and things were like booked up, but I was just like, I saw you had a new book and I was like, oh my God, I want to have him back on. And before we continue, let's just say that this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn. We did say your name, but I like to let people know what they're listening to. But I want to say right off the bat, like, dude, I read this book this morning, Navigating With You. And I think, I don't know if you've won an Eisner yet or what awards or accolades. I was trying to look it up this morning, but this is it, man. Like, I don't know what it, I mean, I've read so many of your books and I've shared so many of them, like with my daughter, like Princeless and stuff like that. And like, I literally was halfway reading this book and I just went on Amazon and ordered the physical copy for my daughter because she doesn't like digital comics. She's one of those kids that likes to have the book. I was so touched by this and blown away by it. Accolades. Like, that's all I can say. Like, you got me teared up. Like, and it's been a while since comic did that. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's interesting because I haven't won an Eisner. I have Princeless was nominated for an Eisner, the first volume.
Got it.
But we lost out to that old Mark Waid guy.
Mark Waid.
Who remembers anything that he's ever done? Certainly not that.
I know, right?
That Daredevil run. You know, we definitely lost to the issue of Daredevil where he's like helping the blind kids from the camp through a snowstorm.
Oh, got it.
Which is one of those that we got nominated against. And I was like, oh yeah, well, this is nice to be nominated.
Darn you, Mark Waid, shaking our fists. No, we love Mark Waid. He's never been on the podcast, but in any case, go on.
It's been an interesting thing. Cause you know, since then I've gotten to be friends with Mark. He actually ended up being the one who made the recommendation for me to work on Unstoppable Wasp, which was a huge thing for me.
Yeah.
That's the only time I've been nominated. So it would be really cool for Navigating With You to win stuff. But it's been something I'm just so excited about. I really love this book. And it was just something that I cooked up with the folks over at Mad Cave and, it's been something that we sort of started off like, oh yeah, it's a fun slice of life romance thing. And as we were building it, it's like, oh, I think this is something special. I hope it is. And then, if the reviews are any indication, other people seem to think so as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, I don't know that awards are any indication of how great something is. I mean, but this is something that I'm kind of like, after reading this book, I'm like, yeah, this is what comics are like. And what's funny to me too, is that if it had not been you necessarily, these are probably not the kind of comics maybe I would seek out for myself. Like usually I'm like superheroes like horror and stuff like that. Like, I don't know why for me, particularly sometimes slice of life, like things don't, but they tend to be the ones that affect me the most, like emotionally. And this one really, I mean, I just loved it. Like there aren't enough affirmative or, I don't know what adjective I'm looking for to say like that, yeah, I mean, I'm passionate about this, as you can tell. I just read it this morning. So I'm like, this is great. I mean, I've always really liked your stuff, but I don't know why. I just feel like you've topped yourself with this one.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been a culmination in an interesting way, just because, you know, there are a lot of things, lessons that I've brought to this, that, you know, from the other stuff I've worked on, be it, you know, obviously earlier stuff like Princeless and things, but I've sort of learned my way through doing stuff and you know, handling romance in Raven. But I think especially like Unstoppable Wasp, I brought a lot of stuff I learned making that book into navigating with you, including like, you know, our readers for the book. We had, you know, readers who have cerebral palsy, as, you know, Nisha, one of our main characters, does, yeah. You know, to give us sort of notes and ideas on how we can handle that well. And yeah, we, you know, I brought the main one of those, Quaid Reed, over from working on Wasp, where, you know, I had the character of Tyena Miranda, who had CP, who was a minor character, but Quaid had given me some feedback on her. And, you know, in this book, we had the opportunity to have a physically disabled character as the, you know, main character in a love story, which is extremely uncommon.
Yeah.
And it was nice to have this chance to do this. And it was nice to have somebody sort of in my back pocket that I could call up and be like, hey, can you read this and tell me what I'm doing wrong and give me notes on how I can make this better?
Sure. I mean, before we go any further, we should say what the book is about. I mean, do you want to let people know what Navigating With You is about? I mean, just off the bat, because, I mean, you've mentioned CP, which is cerebral palsy, correct? Like, that's...
Yes.
Yeah, and there is a character with that condition. I don't know necessarily the proper way to address it off the top of my head in this book, but... Beyond that, what is Navigating With You about? Because people should know as much about this book. Like, yeah, like literally, I am on board with whatever you need from me. Like, I mean, I'm just a silly little podcaster, but I'm like, people should read this book. So let people know what it's about.
So it is a YA slice of life romance. It is about two girls who move to Durham, North Carolina, which is where I'm from different parts of the country, both because their families have both been through some recent hard times and changes, and they meet up at this school. One of them really wants to be friends. One of them is not so keen on making new friends, but they bond over their shared love of this manga that they were both really into, that they discovered they were both really into in middle school, that neither of them have finished. So they decide to put a little book club together themselves and sort of embark on a quest to find all the volumes of this manga that has been sort of out of print.
Yeah.
And so they sort of adventure around the the city and the state a little bit and the rest of the country a little bit and put this together and are, you know, reading this story while at the same time becoming best friends and then, you know, much more than friends by the end of the story. Sort of not just finding friendship, but love and sort of seeing some of that reflected in the stories they're reading and learning something about themselves through that as well.
Yeah. I just have to say it's, and I don't read everything. Obviously, this podcast is called Part-Time Fanboy. I read as much as I can. I read the things that I want to read. Like, I learned a long time ago that if you're a critic of things or you write reviews, sometimes you will end up having to read stuff that you're not necessarily like totally interested in. But this has been the most like heartfelt, like warm, emotional thing that I have read in a long time. And it just got to me. And as I was going through the book, what's really funny is because it is like a love story, right? But it's also a friendship story, and how you make friends and how you meet people and how you become friends with people that you may not necessarily think that you're going to be friends with. I mean, I don't know that I've ever chatted about this on my podcast, but I've been married to my wife for like over 25 years. And we first met each other. I did not like her at all. Like, we didn't like each other. And in this book, you have two characters who, at least one of the main characters, is like, I don't want to make friends. I don't want to be friends. And then they become the best of friends. And it's just such a great, like, look at how things develop, how you become friends, how things grow. And you've done such a magnificent job of showing that in such a real way that I was just like taken up by it. Like, can you speak to, like, I don't know. It's such a stupid question. Like, how did you do that? Like, how did you tap into that so well?
I don't know. It's an interesting thing because I feel like all of my characters to some extent are based in a lot of the, you know, people that I know, people who are my friends. And a lot of it was sort of like feeling out these characters and getting a beat on like what they liked and who they are and what's important to them. And just sort of like they both have these experiences that have sort of shaken up their lives and thrown them into this spot where they're both sort of like raw and open to, you know, they don't know anybody else around there. They've got to do something. And, you know, they have very different personality types. So, you know, Gabby is our Floridian. She's mixed Mexican and Puerto Rican. And she's sort of moved up here because of a hurricane in Florida, which is always a relatable topic that has, you know, wiped out her family's house, has messed up the house, and the company her dad works for has transferred them up here to North Carolina. So, you know, they're dealing with a whole new world around them. Well, Nisha, who is our black protagonist, who's from Manhattan, who's from New York, her parents have just been through a divorce, and she has moved to North Carolina, where her mom, you know, owns a house that used to belong to her grandmother who lived down here. So they sort of have just moved down here, and, you know, neither of them know anybody. They've got sort of their own stuff going on. I think it was really important to me to have this idea of what they're like, what their whole lives were like, where they thought things were going before, you know, they got interrupted by these big things. And I think they both have to deal with sort of huge changes and losses in this. But at the same time, one of the things that was important to me is that over the course of the story, like, they change and they get better, they feel better, but ultimately, like, those situations don't change. They don't, you know, they're not dealing. Gabby or Nisha's parents haven't suddenly gotten back together. Things aren't perfect in Gabby's life. They're not back to the way they used to be. So, like, it's just, it became sort of this kind of soft story of them finding each other at the moment that they needed somebody else, and, you know, finding this way to give the other person what they need.
Yeah. No, I mean, that to me was probably the, like, I mean, it's really funny too, because, like, as sort of like, it's just so weird, like, me personally reading this, I mean, obviously I don't have cerebral palsy, but I am half Latin. I did grow up a nerd. I grew up in a single parent, you know, household. So that kind of, particularly like in the 70s and 80s, kind of made you stand out a little bit, like, at school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with a Latin mom and stuff like that, Latina. And, you know, it's really interesting to me how much I kind of clicked into both aspects of the character, because, like, one of the things, like, if you're a comic book reader or a nerd of any kind, or you like anime or manga or comics or movies and stuff like that, you are going to find characters that you will identify with in this book, even if you are not exactly like these characters. Like, I'm male, cis, you know, straight, like, you know, I'm born, you know, but I just loved these two, like, characters. And just, that's one of the things that always impresses me about you, is that you are not these, you're not female, you know what I mean? You're not, but you always, mm-hmm, like, tap into these characters so well and do such a great job. And I know I've asked you this before, but how are you, like, how, I mean, again, it's the stupid question to ask the writer, but you are better at this than a lot of other writers that I've read. Like, what is it about you, sir, that like makes you able to tap into these characters who are not characters that we are necessarily seeing in comics and media and other places.
I think in a lot of cases, I think the key is to make people, or to try and make characters complicated, to make them have all these different sides and aspects that you might not try. Because I think in a lot of cases when people try to do capital R representation, they're like, all right, and so we'll make them like this, and here are the 5 bullet points of what it's like to be Mexican. Here's the 5 bullet points of what it's like to be disabled.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not like that. That's not how lived experience works. And so I think the key is to just like, because I think one of the big things for me with this was that I wanted to have a character. There are two things. Oh God. Okay. Sorry. Circles.
go for it. That's what we're here for.
I think one of the biggest problems, and this goes for a lot of different aspects of characters, is that when people are trying to do some sort of like capital R representation thing, they make it about that aspect of the person. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
they make it about, hey, this is what it's like to be, you know, Latino. This is what it's like to be Black. This is what it's like to be disabled. Whereas like, what it's really like to be anything is to have that as a thing that is always going on in the background, that is always happening in your life while you're trying to do other stuff, while you're trying to live your life. I remember I did a panel at Dragon Con where we were talking about queer characters in comics. And I asked the question, how many people in this panel are queer? Consider yourself queer. And almost the whole panel raised their hands. And I was like, great. How many of you came out today? And everybody's hands go down. Because it's like that, you know, there's life after coming out. There's life after being disabled. There's, you know, lots of life that doesn't directly only involve your ethnicity. And so like having those things as part of your identity that constantly matter, that are constantly in the background of your life, without everything having to be about those the way it so often is in, you know, a movie or a show with these types of characters, I think is important. Because like, I think being disabled, especially having a disability like Nisha's, which is something she's had since, since she was a kid, it's not about like one big thing, one huge thing that you can't do, or that's thrown an obstacle that's thrown against you that you can't overcome. It's much more about like the thousands of little things that you encounter daily that people do and say without thinking about them to you, and how those things affect you, and how they, you know, affect your ability to navigate your own world.
Yeah.
And I think keeping all of those things sort of in balance as things happening with the characters, while not making every story about coming out, whether it be about gender, sexuality, or whether it be about race or grief or disability, giving people who are, a minority in some respect, the ability to have a story that isn't always just about that thing. Because
yeah.
most of our stories, I think people would argue, are not. Like,
but
you don't stop, you don't stop being queer just because you're in the middle of an action adventure. You don't stop being Black just because you're in the middle of a romance. You know,
yeah.
it's all those kind of things going on at the same time. But I think that's kind of, to answer your question, I think that's what I try to do is research and have readers and people who can give me notes and give me ideas of ways in which like there are things happening for people who are not me, that I am never going to see, that I'm never going to realize or think about. And having that sort of insight, be it from, you know, people I'm talking to while I'm researching the book, or people who read the first draft and give notes on ways that things can be better represented, or actually are there. And those are, I think that's incredibly important. And then, you know, there are also aspects of myself that I get to throw into things, like, you know, Gabby being half Mexican, there's a lot of like things that pop up in there that are from my own childhood, being that like, I am not half Mexican, but my dad's stepfather, who was like the only real grandfather that I had that was around for most of my life, is Mexican. And that was like, as like, you know, culturally, a lot of this stuff is like stuff that I lived, that I've been through, because, you know, that's stuff that was important to me, even if it's not something that is necessarily visible when you look at me.
Yeah. You know, I mean, one of the things that I'm thinking about, like, as you're talking about this, and as I was reading the book, that I really appreciated, I mean, Nisha in particular, there's a couple of scenes where she really stands up for herself, you know what I mean? Or advocates for what she wants, like, quite strongly. And I think I identified with that part of, like, your teenage years, where, because I mean, I know that for me, there was a point, there was a long time where I was very timid and like didn't stand up for myself. And then a couple of things happened during my youth, particularly my high school years, where it's just like, I got like angry and I kind of like embraced that anger, and it kind of like helped me stand up for myself, right? Like, I started standing up to whatever bullies, or like advocating for myself in a class, or even to my own parent, you know, my own mother, and things like that. And I just felt that you kind of captured that, though, that bit so well. And not just in that, like, I am a disabled person or I have cerebral palsy, but also in a way where it's kind of like, I'm mad as hell and I'm not taking this anymore, but not to that extreme. Am I making any sense there?
No, absolutely. And I think, like, that was important to me. You know, in this case, in that scene, Gabby is going through some stuff as well. But in Nisha's case, like, she is very familiar with, you know, not the fact that not every not every example of discrimination is something that, like, people realize they are discriminating against you at the time, or they may see it as them trying to do good or be nice to you in some way.
Yeah.
And I think particularly with physically visible disabilities, people tend to do a lot of things that are just ignorant. And, you know, that was a case here where, like, you know, talking to people who, you know, going into this book, and I was like, you know, what are the things that I'm going to miss as a person who doesn't have CP, who doesn't, you know, have a physical visible disability, will not know to look out for. And it's just a question of, like, one thing people brought up is just, like, people talk to you slow, like, any disability means that you also have some sort of mental disability, that you're somehow hearing disabled, or that you're not able to comprehend what they're saying, just because, you know, you have braces or crutches or you know, whatever thing they're seeing. They just assume that one disability is the same as every other disability. And they you know, this principal in the beginning of the story sort of takes it on himself to change all of Nisha's classes, because he assumes that somebody with CP wouldn't be able to keep up with normal honors classes without seeing her first, or understanding what CP is and how it differs from person to person.
Yeah. No, I mean, and then there's also the particular, like you said, like, kind of like discriminating without knowing. There's also that sort of, like, very obvious bit in the beginning with Gabby, where it's like the dress code and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, as the father of a teenage daughter, like, it's like, oh, really? Like, we have to worry about boys being distracted. Like, I'm like, what is, like, people should be able to sort of, I mean, it's just really great how you've sort of, like, touched on, like, the little things as well. You know what I mean? That we just kind of, like, everyone takes for granted. And it's like, oh, I have to hide myself because of what other people want. And then the thing that I found really great about it, too, is that these are fully formed characters that, beyond the tragedies or the difficulties that they're dealing with, they have abilities, they have skills, they have things that kind of like, you know, in particular niches, her sewing ability or her ability to make, you know, cosplay costumes for people and make money off of that. Like it's just, you've made this like, I mean, I just think it's such a great read for anybody who is into the sort of things that I know I am into. I'm assuming you are into as well, because you write comics and you enjoy graphic novels. And I think you've done like such a great job of looking at everything like in such a, for lack of a better term, like a global way, right? I mean, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was an interesting challenge for me as somebody who's told a lot of stories where it's very like conflict central, things like superhero stories and sure. like, you know, Princeless as well. Any action story has a big sort of conflict at the center of it. And to know that this is like a romance story that, you know, is set in the real world and has very like real world parameters and, you know, was not going to have a big like fight moment in this, to have this chance to just sort of sit with and explore the characters and get to see, who they are and get to really invest time in them without having to worry about, oh, you know, am I hitting the next plot point? Am I tying this into the massive thing that's happening in all these other books or whatever, but to really like get to explore their characters and their relationship in a very global and an interesting way. And I think also, you know, setting it in somewhere that I'm very familiar with and that I love gave me sort of an opportunity to play with spaces they could go and things they could do and, you know, get to show some love to the city where I live.
Yeah. I mean, again, as we're sort of discussing this, I'm thinking like several, like lots of things are like going through my head, and reading this book reminded me of and you mentioned sort of like all the sort of like plot points that you have to hit in your other work or like action scenes and stuff like that. And to me, reading this was so different than a lot of other comics that I read. I mean, obviously I've read a lot of comics and I've read, you know, narratives and, you know, slice of life and stuff like that. But when I was reading this, I felt the first time I watched like Kiki's Delivery Service, which is like my favorite Miyazaki movie, where I was just mm-hmm. like, or, you know, My Neighbor Totoro, where I was like, animation doesn't have to be like banging things over the head or action or screaming or like in your face and stuff. It can be meditative, right? And it can be eye-opening and it can be, you know, not even educational, that's not the word that I'm looking for, but like just like a meditative experience where you're sort of like opening up the world and you're seeing things in a different place without having things like hammered you over the head. Like, you know what I mean? And that's what I felt like when I was reading this. I felt like I was like reading about like two people like going through their lives, and they do have their dramatic moments, but there's nothing in here where I felt like it was being forced on me. I felt like there was a narrative flow that was like even and had its ups and downs, but that I just got sucked into and hasn't felt like anything I've read in a long time. Was that purposeful on your part? I mean, it seems like it was when you were, what you were just talking about before.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we had an opportunity, I think, to tell a different type of story. And I think, like, one of the things I think is a great sort of power of storytelling is that you can put people inside of, you know, the head of somebody who's not like them. You can have a chance to tell a story from, in this case, you know, two different points of views of characters who are unique and distinct probably from the majority of people reading the book. And so it's like, I think that is a power that we, I think, underutilize or at least underestimate how, what a big difference it can make to put together a story where somebody is able to really just see what it's like to be in the life of another person, what it's like to go through all this stuff. And there is, you know, some, there's still some like mystery, and there's some pretty dramatic stuff that happens in this book.
Yeah.
But it is still like things that are very closely tied to their real lives and who they are, and, you know, very real things that happen to people. And I think especially in a season where like there's so much being pushed about the differences between people and the ways in which people are sort of monstrous or horrible, and just having a story that's like about very human stuff, falling in love and, you know, being in a new place and trying to figure out your own life, that is just like, it is definitely written with purpose, but like is not particularly trying to push one concept or another on people, other than just like, hey, this is, you know, this is a real, I mean, it's not a real story, obviously, but it's what real people live like.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, one of the aspects about this book that I really enjoyed too, that I wasn't, that I didn't necessarily know going is them hunting down the manga, right? Or them finding a book that they were both interested in at one point and like really loved, and rereading it and going back to it and sort of like having this, particularly Nisha, and they have a difference of opinion on the book, but they're seeing it like with fresh eyes. And they both, what was interesting to me is that they both have points about like what is happening in the book, and they disagree, but they're both kind of right. And also the aspect of like revisiting something that you loved as a teenager or maybe a young kid, and looking at it again through new eyes and being like, wait a minute, this isn't kind of as like wholesome or nice as we thought it was. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think, you know, getting older and watching stuff, and I think in particular, like in my case, I do my own podcast called Progressively Horrified, which is all about like watching horror movies and trying to like understand the messages in them, be they, you know, progressive or not. And in a lot of cases they are, but like trying to really critically understand what stories are telling you and what they're setting up, what all the little things that go into making a story actually mean and how they matter and if they matter. It's really interesting as you get older and, you know, you rewatch these things that, you know, when you first watch stuff, a lot of times you're just like, all right, let me just take this in, or you have a preconceived notion of what a thing is, and you either, you know, roll your eyes at the ways in which it is that thing, or you are surprised if you allow yourself to be, in some cases, to, you know, see a different filled out world. But I think, you know, this is a case where neither of them has read the whole thing, but they've gotten to this point. They've both gotten to about the same point in the story where they like have an idea of what it's about. But both of them have, you know, have come to very different conclusions about what they think that thing it's about is and where it's going. And, you know, it's interesting to be a lot of times on the writer's side of that and have, you know, with things like Twitter, if you're doing monthly comics, there are a lot of people who react very loudly and aggressively to what they think is going on in a story. And as a writer, it's interesting to see how often that is wrong, but how often they are so sure that it's right. Because if anything, I feel like I am maybe most like the character, the mangaka that they meet at, you know, towards the end of the story, who's, you know, is excited to see that other people have, it's reached other people and that they have related to it in a strong way. You know, often I get to be the person who's sitting behind the table who, you know, I think it's one of the best parts of my job that I get to have people come up and gush about how much they loved a thing I wrote.
Yeah.
How strongly it related to them. And, you know, in a lot of cases, there's bits of things that I myself was dealing with in there that, you know, I get to help them deal with as well.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things about the manga story, which was funny, is because that's part of this book, is like they're trying to hunt down a manga that is now out of print, which, you know, the Tokyo Pop era is gone. So trying to find some of that stuff sometimes is hard and can be expensive. But luckily, they, you know, find libraries and use bookstores and yard sales and things like that, which, as I'm sure you know, like comic fans, whenever we're trying to hunt something down, there obviously is eBay, but, you know, going out and finding like used bookstores, thrift stores, things like that, and coming across things, it feels like a treasure hunt, like almost like you're Indiana Jones finding the idol or something, like, you know what I mean? And I love that aspect of this too, is that the clever ways or how they hunt stuff down and, you know, track the book that they are trying to read. And then once they get it, they're sort of like, hey, this wasn't exactly how I remembered it. Or this is, there's aspects of this book that are messed up. But as, you know, I'm reading this book and they find more of the manga, they're like, oh, wait, it's not necessarily what I thought it was. But it started off kind of harsh. Like, because I remember, because when I was reading the book, I was like, oh, yeah, this guy's kind of a jerk. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm like, how are they going to address that? Like, are they still going to like it? Are they still going to kind of want to read it? And that is brought up. And, but then by the end of the story, it becomes a thing of like female empowerment, right? And, what other manga or like, is that something that you saw in old manga that you liked, or is manga something that you enjoyed reading and kind of went back and were like, oh, certain aspects of this are troublesome? And I like, did you have that experience yourself?
That's interesting, because I think there's some there's some ways in which different people have reacted to manga over time, which pops up in this story.
Yeah.
In which, like, there's one point where Gabby is attempting to buy a volume of this from a Christian, you know, a Goodwill kind of store. And the woman doesn't want to sell it to her because she is under the impression that Japanimation, as she calls it, is dirty and has a lot of sex and stuff in it, which, like, I feel like you and I lived through that era where that was like a story that was on TV, like, weekly for a while. Where people discovered the early volumes of, you know, Dragon Ball, where some of that stuff is difficult to look at now. And they've sort of gone back and retold that story a few times in ways that are, you know, thankfully less problematic in some strong spots. And I think that the way that we look at a lot of those kinds of stories have changed quite a bit over the years, for the better, for the most part. But it's, yeah, I think it's interesting because you connect with stuff when you're younger and you don't really know why. And you go back and read things, sometimes you're like, oh, okay, like that's why this really worked for me. Or in some cases, you know, you have stuff that you read as a kid that you didn't really connect with, or, and, you know, really works for you as an adult, where you're picking up on stuff you didn't necessarily realize was there before. And sometimes in ways that are about the ways in which you have changed as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is one aspect that I just really loved about this book. But I mean, beyond the sort of like relationship of these two characters, which I thought was wonderful. And one of the things that I really kind of enjoyed about this book is, like, you know, as I'm getting sucked in and I'm getting sucked into their friendship and I'm getting sucked into their relationship and things like that, like, I was very much like, oh, you know how this goes. Like, I was very much like, something bad is coming. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, I guess I was enough aware. I've become aware enough at my age to be like, if there's a romance or if something's coming on, like, something bad is going to happen to end this. But I feel like you really navigated this whole thing in a different way, to where, you know, each character has their sort of like traumas and things that they've gone with. And it kind of like becomes more about that and how they support each other through it. Can you talk to me about how you I mean, I guess for lack of a better word, navigated that, like went through that and made it different than sort of like your typical sort of YA romance or, you know, teen book, because I feel like this is very different in the way that it's presented.
Yeah, I think it's interesting in that I think the book is about this romance between them, but in a lot of ways, the as you're going through the story, like the romance is secondary in some spots to both the searching for books, but also the stuff they're going through themselves. Which, you know, when you're in a romance, there's your life doesn't just stop to be in that. It's not like we don't have the luxury of the setup of, you know, Elizabethan England or Victorian England, where you just had like, yeah, the summer you just go to the country and your job is to find a wife or a husband.
Yeah.
Life continues to go on while you're going through romances, and having these things. So I think it was important that like they don't just find people who are who they just find themselves attracted to and then have a will they won't they situation. It's a question of like they build this friendship and they are there for each other in ways that that they need, and that develops into a deeper connection that, you know, is romantic in nature, where it wasn't necessarily to begin with. And they, I think, both come to it at different times and through different ways, and in some cases resist it because of other stuff that's going on in their life, but at the same time, you know, manage to find themselves at the same spot in some places, and largely those have to do with the other things that are going on in their lives and the way that, you know, the two of them find that they are there, the other person is there for them in a way that they need and that people in their past haven't been.
Yeah. I mean, that I think one of the things that I really loved about it too was showing how a friendship or a relationship helps them grow, right? Or like move through stuff that they've gone through. I mean, that's what kind of I think felt very real, was that they're each person in this relationship is making them see things, making them grow, making them realize things about themselves. And that is the most healthy part of a relationship or a romance, right? And I think that's what, I mean, there's just so much like really great touchstones of like what happens as you meet somebody new and as that person pushes you to become kind of like a little bit of a better version of yourself or more understanding of your own things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting because something that I could do that was easier to do considering their age was sort of like build a romantic history into both of them. And, you know, these are the people that they've been with before, and you don't necessarily know this stuff up front, but that, you know, Josh, Gabby's boyfriend at the beginning of the story is a major sort of factor in the background, but also that, you know, there's a scene where they're driving a long distance together and they decide to have a chat about like what their exes or what their other relationships have been like. And you know, you get to see, I think if you're sharp-eyed, you get to see where some of the stuff that they are sensitive about, that they care about now, that you already know throughout the book, where, you know, some of that has come from. Especially in Nisha's case, because, you know, she's had two relationships with people who have gotten, sort of understood different aspects of her, but, not sort of the whole her in a way that, is what she wants and what, you know, I think Gabby is able to give. You know, I think in particular you get, It was interesting because I had this stuff mapped out sort of from the beginning of what these relationships had been like. And I think in particular, you get a story about her girlfriend, Jade, who sort of treated her using a wheelchair like she was a prop.
Yeah.
And that's something that very directly came from people I talked to and stuff like that, that I was like, yeah, this is, I think, something that people wouldn't necessarily think about, that, you know, is really affected the way that she interacts with her own disability, just because she is conscious, she is self-conscious about the way people react to it rather than the disability itself, which she has, you know, long since dealt with and is part of who she is, but you can't necessarily determine how people are going to react to it. And it's sort of like part of where she's at in her life when we meet her.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that you've done really well, particularly as I was reading the book, I was like, you balance the characters, the two main protagonists, like really well. Like at one point I was like, oh, this is about this character. And then I was like, oh no, wait, it's about this character. And it's about them both. Like, how did you do strike that balance? How do you do that? Like, as you're crafting, like, cause it seems like it's so equally balanced. Like I said, at one point I'm like, oh wait, this is about Nisha. Oh no, wait, this is about, yeah. And then, but it's about them both and like their separate lives and how they come together. Is there a particular like writing exercise that you did with that? Or was there an awareness that you had to have, or did your readers help you with that? Because I felt like you did such a really remarkable job of like showing both of them and what they're going through and how they're dealing with their insecurities and what the other person gives to them as they're going through this friendship. How did you, like, was there something special that you did in particular for this book?
That's a tough question, because I feel like the first thing I did was sort of sit down and say like, all right, I'm going to switch back on like, you know, there's no like really visible chapters in the book, but as I was writing it, I had it broken down by chapter. And it was like, you know, each chapter needs to be from one of their point of view, and they need to swap every chapter. Every chapter needs to have them finding one of the books. So we get, you know, an excerpt from the manga in each chapter, in a place that it's logical for whoever's chapter it is to sit down and read it. And then sort of like figure out what the big events were that I needed to have and whose perspective we needed to see those from. You know, in the case of, I think when Gabby has her breakdown, it's very important to know sort of like what is going on and what she's seeing versus what, you know, Nisha is saying. And, you know, it's important to have these sort of like places where the stuff hits. And also like we broke it up. I ended up breaking it up with text chains. So like the change in chapter is them texting each other back and forth. So it gave this sort of like a nice opportunity to wrap up the previous chapter and lead into the next chapter, without it having to feel like it's really like stopping and changing perspective. Because you're getting, you know, on the text, you're getting the same amount from both of them. You're getting, you know, an idea of what they're saying, and you're seeing them, but you're not necessarily getting any more insight into what either of them are thinking or feeling than the other. And then sort of like hand it off there. I don't know that there's a particular exercise that I did so much as like just spending a lot of time with the characters, sort of getting down what their voices are and what separates those voices from each other. And then I think in a lot of cases it ended up being more interesting to see the, in some cases, to see the other character, to see the character who is going through something from the perspective of the other person. And sort of like, you know, give it a chance to really like feel what it was like to be in the room with that person, and then, you know, have have set up enough stuff and be able to follow it up enough that, like, you get to know what the, you know, what it was that was going through that other person's head as well. So yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting task, and I think was a lot of like trial and error of trying to figure out how it best worked and where to do the changeovers and a lot of editing, because the original draft of this was about 80 pages longer. And I think it was interesting because when I signed the contract on this with Mad Cave, they originally were like 200 pages. That's how long we want it. No more than that. It can be maybe, you know, 10, 20 less than that. And I finished the first draft and it was 300 pages.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, yeah, that's not going to work. Like, well, this is not what we've budgeted. There's no way for us to accommodate that. You know, and my editor, Lauren Heitzusen, sat down with me and was like, we need to lose 100 pages. Let's both just like get to this and find the stuff that absolutely has to be there and find ways to get to some of the other things without having to have, you know, the scenes that they occur in, which I think a lot of that stuff went into the text chains, you know, where you hear about things that have been happening and see, you hear about it through the eyes of them as they're texting each other. Rather than having to see all of it. But it was a lot of like boiling down and boiling down and boiling down. And finally we got to 220 pages. And, you know, both Lauren and I were like, hey, look, if we cut another 20 pages, it's definitely going to affect like the quality of this story.
Wow.
And Mad Cave was able to like give us the extra 20 pages to, you know, to find that in the budget. I think to some extent was like, well, at least we don't have to do 100. They definitely tried and cut some stuff down. So, you know, they worked with us on that. So it's around 220 pages rather than the original 300,
wow,
which would have been quite long. And I honestly don't think is good. I think we found a lot of stuff about the characters in ways that worked better in the shorter version. And you know, there's conversations and things that were lost, and there's a whole spring break section that's sort of cut out. There's a bit with where in the original version Josh actually, you know, appeared in Durham at one point.
Oh wow.
And was part of the story. But I honestly don't think that was necessary. And as we were cutting it down, I was like, no, I think it works better this way. It's definitely reads a lot cleaner, I think.
Oh, so no director's cut coming from you or anything like that in the future?
No, I think that would take a lot to get it back. And yeah, I think, you know, I definitely like to tell more stories with these characters in this world. But no, I don't think we'll be revising this version at all.
Sure, sure. And the one thing I wanted to call out was your artist. Is it Cassio Ribeiro or
is that? Yeah, Cassio Ribeiro.
Ribeiro. Yeah. Got it. Loved the work on this. I mean, just loved it. Just everything in this is visually perfect. I mean, I fell in love with it from the moment that I opened it. And I mean, obviously you are the writer, but I wanted to, we've been talking about how much I love this book so much that I had to just, you know, get it in there before we wrapped up because we're almost at an hour and I don't want to keep you too long. Although I could keep talking about this book, like seems like forever, because I feel like I was really personally affected by it and just like loved it. And yeah, I mean, I got choked up at one point, which hasn't happened with me with a comic book in a long time. And so this is through Maverick, right? Which is the YA like branch of Mad Cave Studios, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Got it. And I guess just, it sounds like you worked really extensively with their editor, but is this something that you had, like your own kind of concept and you pitched it to them, or did they come to you and say like, we want to do something with you, or like how did this whole procedure work where you actually got to work with Mad Cave? Because I've actually interviewed a lot of their creators over the past several years and really enjoyed their stuff. But I think I have to say that, you may have elevated a bit with this. I mean, I'm not knocking Mad Cave. I love all their stuff, but I was like, oh, great. Wow. is this something that you had that you went to them with, or?
You know, it's funny because it's a little bit of both, because they wanted to do a romance story, and they had sort of the idea of it having to do with people falling in love over manga. And that was pretty much the extent of what they had. I think it was like a one or two paragraph, like, this is kind of what we want to do. And I was like, I took that idea and I was like, I really like this. First of all, can it be gay? You know, and they were like, oh yeah, absolutely. And I was like, cool. You know, second of all, like, I want to have the room to, you know, to do stuff with characters and do stuff with this world. And, you know, I think from very early on, I was like, and I wanted to have, you know, stuff from the manga in there. I wanted to have this and that. And I got to sort of develop these characters whole cloth and do, they kind of, you know, let me do whatever I wanted to just with this very like simple starting concept. And, you know, we really built it out from there. And yeah, it was a pleasure, because they're also like, you know, they found the artist. I think Lauren brought a couple of different possibilities to me, and Cassio was one of them. And Cassio was really like what I had in mind, as far as I wanted things to be bright. I wanted the world to feel like lived in, and you know, I wanted it to be like an Alfonso Cuarón movie, where there's just like piles of junk everywhere. People just, the spaces feel really lived in. And you know, you really get a feel for like what the world is like. And I really liked Cassio's art in that respect. And you know, early on we were like, you know, we might need to find a different artist to do the manga part of it. You know, I haven't seen any of his stuff that looks anything like what sort of we're going for there. And, you know, they gave Cassio a chance to sort of do a couple of test pages of the manga stuff just to see if it would be a good fit. And, you know, it was incredible. He has two completely different styles in the book for the manga and for the regular story itself. And he just really nails both of them. I couldn't say enough about how well he did all this and how amazingly it's put together, especially considering like the whole thing takes place in, you know, in North Carolina, and he's from Brazil.
Yeah.
So he's doing a lot of this from like me going around Durham here, just like taking pictures of locations and general areas. And like, this is, you know, this is what this would look like. This is what the school that I'm talking about, you know, would look like. Yeah. And sort of like, there's a lot of real locations that appear in this story, and then a lot of like places, things that are inspired by real locations as well, because like the school is called and this is called Durham Western, and it's based on the school that's by me, which is Southern. And so like it's a, you know, it's a one that doesn't really exist, but it is modeled on sort of what Southern looks like, and getting that feel of what you know, what these schools that were built in the 70s and 80s that are still around here look like.
Oh, that's fascinating that he was able to capture, you know, everything the way that he did, you know, being just off of photographic reference. I mean, that's great.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, Durham doesn't look anything like Rio, which is where he's
yeah,
from.
No, I knew that. So yeah. No, I lived in South America and Colombia for a year when I was little, so yeah, I can attest to that for sure. But that's interesting that you would say that about Cassio's artwork, because it did feel a little manga inspired to me when I was reading it. I was like, oh, okay, this is definitely for a particular audience that likes manga or likes that sort of visual style. That's what I felt when I was reading the book. And so to me, the switch to manga just seemed like it would be natural, or that he would have been able to capture that. I'm surprised that you or Mad Cave had doubts about like that switch would have been something that he could have done.
I think the question for me was a lot more, a lot of his stuff is very like defined by the colors and the coloring that he uses. And I think with the manga, I wanted it to feel not just actually like a manga, to be black and white, but also to have that sort of like very inky 90s manga feel of like, you know, there's a lot of it is in space, so there's a lot of like,
yeah,
you know, starry black backgrounds.
Sure.
And a lot of very like, it's, I wanted it to have that feel of sort of that, you know, that thing that you read a couple of volumes of but could never find the rest of and never got around to tracking down, you know.
Sure.
Because I think especially in those, like you were saying, the Tokyo Pop days and all that, there were a lot of books that, like, you know, you didn't really know what was happening. It was coming here a year or 2 years after it came out in Japan, and it might not do well enough in the U.S. that they would continue translating it. They might, you know, just drop it in the middle of the
That's still happening.
The run. Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's a particular Naoki Urasawa is like one of my favorite manga comic creators of all time, and there's a series that he's doing that I think a new book hasn't come out, or at least I haven't been notified about it in months, and I'm like, what are you doing? I need more of this. Yeah. So, oh wow, that's great. That's great. Well, Jeremy, I can't congratulate you enough. I mean, I know this book has been out since what? Like, was it September that you first or like let me know about it, or
August. It came out in mid-August.
Got it. So it's been out for a little while. It sounds like you're getting really great reviews on it. I can't recommend it enough. I think it deserves an Eisner. I think it deserves all the awards thrown at it. I loved it. I fell in love with it, you know, and just you continue to impress me, sir, with your ability to write and the talent that you work with. And so I'm always happy to have you on, and thank you for always considering me. You know, I'm not Kevin Smith. So I just appreciate I appreciate you keeping me on the list and letting me know about your projects and sharing them with me. It really means a lot to me, and particularly this volume. I think Mad Cave Maverick has something that they should be, and you should be, especially proud of.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much. And yeah, I'm always glad to come on and glad to share what I'm working on.
Yeah. I'm sorry it took so long to get to it, because you are one of my favorite guests to have on. So just things have been really weird. Like things fill up in advance now, and that never used to happen with me. So I'm just very, very happy to have you back on. So there's always a spot for you, even if it's late. But where can people find you and your stuff, sir? Where can people find you online?
My website is jeremywhitley.com. You can contact me through that if you need to. I'm also on much more on Blue Sky these days, which I'm just at Jeremy Whitley. I'm still theoretically around Twitter, though I use it a lot less. It seems a lot less useful.
Twix is evil.
Yeah, I'm Jerome58 over there. Gotcha. So I'm still theoretically available.
Gotcha.
And then, people can check out my podcast as well, which I mentioned, Progressively Horrified, which comes out every Friday. And we just... It's a bunch of queer, nerdy kids who watch horror movies and talk about ways in which they are and aren't progressive.
That's awesome. That's great. I mean, we're in the middle of our horror movie marathon, which we do every October. So that this will debut during the same week as another one of those episodes. So I think that you and I are simpatico with our love of horror stuff. So yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for joining me again.
Absolutely.
The book is called Navigating With You. It is out by Maverick, which is an imprint of Mad Cave Studios. I love this book. I mean, I think it deserves all the accolades. I'm not just saying that because I've had you on the podcast before. I read it this morning before our interview, and it melted me. Like, I was just like, I love this thing. Like, I just can't, like, you know. And so you got me, Jeremy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm so glad to hear it. And yeah, I'm hoping everybody feels the same way about it you do.
Well, they should. I'm going to, like I said, I bought it immediately. I'm going to pass it off to my daughter. I'm sure she'll love it. So this deserves it. Navigating With You, Mad Cave Studios, Maverick. My name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out at parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are still on Facebook. We are still on Instagram. We are no longer on the hellscape that is Twix, but we jumped on Threads. I don't know how useful that is at this point, but I'm experimenting, folks. That's what I'm doing. Anyway, please check out Navigating With You. Again, Jeremy Whitley, thank you so much for coming on. I love this book. Thank you for sharing it with me. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time sad boy. Part-time. Part-time sad boy.